Hey, y'all, and welcome to Trials to Triumphs. I'm Ashley Blaine Featherston Jenkins, but you can call me ABFJ. This week, actress, comedian, and social justice advocate Amanda Seales talks to me about the cost of speaking the truth. We live in a world where we say we value honesty, but in truth, we often find it tough to swallow. I've always respected Amanda's ability to speak the truth, especially when that authenticity is uncomfortable and comes at a cost.
I think people always ask, like, you know, has your honesty kept you from getting certain roles or, you know, kind of attaining a certain level of fame? But when I was honest with myself, I realized you don't want that anyway. I don't want that. I don't want to be a superstar. I am a star. Like, my personality is very like, hello, I'm here, you know, but I don't aspire for everyone to know, did you know Amanda's here? Like, that's a different thing.
Hi, Amanda. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, man. Amanda, listen. Let me tell you something.
That pitch, Amanda. I'm like, where are we going, child? Where are we going?
No, it's good. Let me tell you something. I really value people that are authentic and who teach me something. I really love when I'm in the presence of somebody and I leave and I'm like, ooh, I didn't know that. Or they told me this. Or can you believe this is happening? And you are just one of those people who it's just like in your DNA. You can't help yourself. You know, you are just one of the most authentic and informative people I know. And the older I get, thanks, the more man. I realize not only how rare people like yourself are, but also how important you are. Yeah. But I think it's really important to let people know, one, that they matter, appreciated, but also that, like, I feel like I'm a smarter, better human being anytime I'm in your presence, looking at a video, hearing you on a podcast, seeing you on a show. So thank I just want to honor you and say thank you.
Aw, man. I appreciate you. I really do. Thank you. That means a lot. You know, we old heads now. So
yeah. And the other thing I want to add, Amanda, too, and we'll get into it more, but there's a cost to that. When you are that person, when God blesses you with those gifts, there's a cost. And so, again, I want to thank you because I know it costs you something to give us so much. But I see you, sis.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. That's not been my experience in the past. So, you know, as it's interesting to get older and it start being more of a norm, but you're just like, ooh, child, that was a road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a road. We gonna get into it though, but let's start. First, tell everybody, if you can, how and when we met, if you remember.
Not that I face. Just told this story the other day.
Did I you really? Yeah, about me specifically?
About because we met in a very unique way. Do you remember how we met?
I don't. I feel like you've always been a part of my life.
Okay. This is a good story. Wait, I'm about to blow your mind.
Okay.
So you were on a web series called Cupid's
Hello Arrow? Cupid.
Hello Cupid. Hello Cupid. And I was watching Hello Cupid and I was tweeting as I watched. And I said something like, I don't understand why these women da 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 da. And Matthew Cherry added you and Haley Marie Norman and was like, well, you should ask them directly. And I felt some type of way because y'all were characters. Like, I was talking about y'all as characters and he added y'all on Twitter as if I was talking about y'all as women. And like, Ashley, if you replied and were like, hey, sis, you know, would love to talk about it. Like, would love to get more insight. Da, 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 da. Haley was like, I'm going to be in New York tonight if you're trying to pull up. So I literally ended up meeting Haley that night. I met Haley that night in person in New York. We've been friends since. And you and I remember we just like had a cordial exchange of like texting. And then when I came to LA, we had lunch.
Wow. Yes. Amanda, that was in like 2013.
That was 2015. That was 20.
Oh, it was 2015. No, it was before that.
It was before that because I this happened before I moved. So yeah,
so maybe 2014. Mm-hmm. Wow, almost 10 years ago. Wow, I forgot about that Twitter drama. Wow, you're right. I was like, I literally was like, why is this a thing? I love that she's even watching. I love that anybody has an opinion about anything at all. Tell me more, darling. Like, I
listen, Matt. I was like, Matthew, you have these people like not even. And also, I didn't even know Matthew. Like, it was like somebody, you know, I follow. Shout out to Matthew Cherry. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I don't even. I'm moving to LA. And these people are already gonna hate me before I even get there. Great.
And look, it was the opposite. You're friends with us. Well. Look at that. Love that.
Yes.
Okay, let's start at the beginning, Amanda. So you were born in LA, Inglewood. But then you moved to Orlando when you were young, right? Or Florida? Yes. Okay.
Yeah, Orlando. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I want to know, what would you say Inglewood and Orlando gave you? What did they give you, Amanda?
So even though I was born in Inglewood, we ended up moving to the Valley because my mom got robbed.
I did not expect that.
While I was in, like while I was a baby in a crib, like the house got burglarized. So she was like, we're out of here. So we went to the Valley and lived behind a car wash in a little, you know, apartment condo situation.
Where in the Valley?
I went to Lassen Elementary School, so Granada Hills, like by Northridge, like right by Northridge.
Yeah.
I lived across the street from a Taco Bell, which shapes the reason why, you know what? I'm gonna have some Taco Bell today. Now that I said that, I'm gonna have some Taco Bell today. Mm. Like to this day, like sometimes it's just really good for my soul. So I grew up there until I was 8 and then I moved to Orlando. And what's interesting about that is I don't even think I knew in real time what it gave me. And it's also one of those things where I think it just kind of like, it was like happening to me as a kid. And until I was an adult, I couldn't even understand it until someone said it back to me. I got to have lunch with my first grade teacher. Like we reconnected like a couple years ago. And she was like, I have a bone to pick with you. I'm like, why do you have a bone to pick? Why would Miss Channel have a bone to pick with me? And she was like, because you said in your HBO comedy special that you learned the Negro National Anthem in 10th grade, but I had you singing that in first grade. And I was like.
And this teacher is Black, I'm assuming.
Very much so, yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure. I was like, or not, yes. That would have been cool if she wasn't Black, but I love she was Black. Okay.
No, she was. And I just was blown because, so that's one of those things though, where like, I don't have the memory of that in my mind, but that's in my body.
Got it.
Yep. Like that's in my body that I had a Black teacher. And then there was another teacher, Ms. LaBowman, and both of them, she told me, we saw you. She told me, we saw you and we made it our business to protect you. Because brilliant Black children are oftentimes not protected and in that space. And so, you know, that was something that I feel like I got, you know, that I went to Florida with. In Florida, I would say, what did I get? I mean, I got so much. I got a childhood. I got to have an actual childhood. I really got to ride my bike feeling safe. I got to, you know, jump rope. Like I felt safe as a kid. And I know that that is a cornerstone of why, for me personally, of why I feel like I have a fearlessness as an adult. You know, that may translate different for other people, but for me, I know that I feel like my fearlessness is in the fact that like, I did not grow up fearing for my life. I didn't grow up fearing failure. I mean, I am a perfectionist, but that's for like a whole other reason. But like, I was allowed to like try things and not be expected to be perfect at them. Mm-hmm. You know, so like that is, as an artist, like that's key. Like the freedom to fail is imperative as an artist.
Yes. Yes.
And I just got also the opportunity to have like a very Caribbean household, but a very Black American lifestyle.
Mm. Well, that leads me to Grenada. What would you say that Grenada has given you?
You know, there's something really, I don't necessarily have words for it. There's something kind of unspoken about just having a home that I know as someone who has like the duality of being a Black American, that gives you a rootedness that this country has never been able to give Black American people in the real way.
Yes. Yes.
I have dual citizenship. Like I can be out, you know? Wow. And of course, like they'll still call me Yankee, but I'll be over there. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So what's up? Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So just having that space of a whole other home, you know, other home has been such a rich and robust, like, part of my identity and culture in a real way. And also just Grenadians in general are very political and like, we're very funny, like culturally. So like, that's me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my dearest friends in the entire world, Aisha Hines, she's also her
greens,
family's
greens,
from
greens.
Grenada as well. And she blessed us by taking us back there for her wedding. And
oh, yes, I did see those pictures.
Yes.
That was on Grenada's beach.
Yes. And I felt so grateful that she shared that with us because as a Black American who doesn't have a Grenada to go back to, in that regard, like
I know exactly what you mean.
That, you know what I mean? Yeah. I felt it was amazing to me that she has this, that she has, you know, she know, like she has family history in this other beautiful, wonderful country and her people are still there. And it just was great. And again, I'm just so happy that she shared it with us because I felt that it was very emotional for me too. And it sounds like you're saying the exact same thing. So I love that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, I'm beefing with Grenada right now, so but that's a whole other podcast.
Oh no. Okay. Well, I hope y'all work it out.
I'm with my new love Belize, and so we have a courtship.
When did you guys get together?
Me and Belize got together in 2020, right before the pandemic. I was literally in Belize when this fool was like, "We're about to close the country." And my mom was like, "Please come back immediately." But I went to Belize. I had a nervous breakdown in 2020, and I don't know. Like on the other side of it, I just was like, I need to go to Belize, and I've never been before. And my assistant at the time, I was like, please figure this out. And she just found two hotels. I'm not really like a resorty kind of gal. Like I like things that are a bit more, I don't know, boutique is the word, but a bit more naturey. Mm-hmm. And so she found these two places, and I went there. And I'll never forget this because Lauren London said this. She was like, "You took your problems to the water."
Yes, I did.
I'm a Cancer. That's what I mean. Like, I always have to say her name because it's like that's something that Lauren would say. And just the Cancer in me is very, very much it's water every day, all day.
Yes,
like, yeah, we need it. So, yeah. And now I've gone four times, and I'm just obsessed.
Mm-hmm. I've heard great things about it. So I got to go. I got to visit. But Grenada took my heart.
Good.
I thought it was just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah,
and I can't wait to go back.
Spot.
Yes. Who would you say was your rock growing up?
Oh, my mom. I mean, she's, you know,
I thought you would say her, but I want to know, like, why? What is it about her that has really, really held you down? Or do you have a moment that you remember, like, you realized your mom was the realest one on your team? Like, oh, you really, yeah.
I I think that it, well, first of all, it was like, it was just me and my mom, right? Mm-hmm. So, and my family are not reliable. Like, they might support you in this instance, and then they might not. Like, there just wasn't ever, to me, a shared responsibility or obligation to each other. So, but my mom and I had that. And mm-hmm. I mean, I would say my mom, I mean, my mom just was always very down for whatever I envisioned was a thing that, like, my mom never made something that mattered to me not matter.
Oof.
And I think that's really important. Because I can't think, I mean, as a kid, I mean, as an adult, we had our stuff. But as a kid, like, if I was like, yeah, I'm really into hieroglyphics right now, then we into hieroglyphics right now. Like, love, you know, that. Like, and it's not even like we had guap like that. Like, my mom was working two jobs. Like, my mom worked, you know, at a nursing home. She would work double shifts. You know, like, this is not, it's not like there was any silver spoon, but it was like she had just decided that it was going to be me. And she was going to just pour into me. And so I never had the dismissal in that way. I feel like my feelings were dismissed. Like, my mom was not a really emotionally, like, mature person. But I feel like that entire generation, by the way, is just bereft of that. Which is why so many of us are in therapy. And also being like, you got to go to therapy too.
And our poor parents are like, what?
No, my mom, I put my foot down. And was like, you will not get to talk to me unless you go to therapy. And that's where, and there was two rounds. We had to do two rounds of that. But right here, as we're recording this podcast, she is in therapy. And the
is
tools,
she liking it? Is she, does she, irrelevant. Does she see it yet? does she see like the.
So here's the thing. The first round, she saw it immediately. Immediately. Mm. Like, literally would be like, okay, so. Can you give me an example, like, of when, like, you feel like I wasn't emotionally there? And I'm like, what era?
Mm-hmm.
We elementary, middle, or high school, or adult? Like, which one, you know, because I can give you all of them. And I remember her being like, how do you have such a good memory? I said, because for you, they're memories. For me, they're scars. So.
Taking me out. Yeah.
So. I still got them, honey. You know, like, you have a whole other life that you lived before I even existed. You are my whole life. Like,
wow. Oh my God. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Our whole lives, our parents have been in our.
You're my whole life.
We've only been a part of it.
I'm a portion.
This is what I'm talking about. Every time I talk to you, I'm like, this is a perfect example.
Yeah, like,
that's,
I'm a
taking
phase.
Me out.
I'm a phase of my mom's life. And my mom didn't have me till she was 34. My mom had a whole existence. My mom had a whole marriage before I existed. So, you know, we're just like a phase of their thing. Whereas, like, I do not know life without my mother.
So, wow, that's crazy. I never thought about that. But that says so much about the child, you know, parent.
Yes. You know, they'll say things like, why do you take everything I say so much? Like, ma'am, you are you are my whole GPS map. Like, you, sis.
You're all, I came from you. You brought me here. Like, what?
We were literally, I was in your body.
Wow. That's
I'm made
real.
Of you. Even if I wasn't in your body, I'm made of you, right? And then if it's not even that, it's just like you were here. Because, you know, we have so many different types of parents right now, right? So it's not even just biological, but it's like my framing of the world was designated and created by you. Even at times when you weren't doing it intentionally. Like, me just witnessing you interact with somebody is framing my world. And then, you're shaping me. And then you get to an age where you're like, all right, now I got to shape myself. And that's arduous because clay hardens over time. Honey, clay hardens over time. So maybe I go to the water because it softens me and it makes me more moldable.
Yes, Amanda, did that just hit you right now?
It hit me right now!
Son,
wow, you're really going there today. Wow.
That actually makes complete sense. You're clay. Ooh, wow. Yeah, I just got to dip your fingers in the water and it's not the...
Yeah. I mean, if you think of us as God's creatures, you know, he's molding us. But ultimately, I just know that my mom, even in her trauma, even in her shortcomings, I know that she is rooting for me. And even sometimes when she's in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you're just like, ma'am, you are in the way right now. You can't even let yourself enjoy this because of your own stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to excise you from this situation, but I know that you love me. I know you do. So you know, my mom has been, I mean, I think what I would say the first time though is when I was three and I was at the Ann Williams after school. No, it was like a preschool. Ann Williams preschool. And my teacher said that we were stupid. And I told my mom, and she came up in that class and was like, I don't know who the hell you think you are, but I better not ever hear about you addressing any of these children as stupid. And you're just like,
I feel like 98.9% of Black folks got a story with their mama or their daddy coming into some school, having to tell some teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody has the story. Everybody.
When I was in third grade, I had just moved to Orlando and I had tested gifted in California. When we went to Florida, my mom, you know, talked to the teacher and was like, okay, so, you know, Amanda, we need to get her scheduled for the gifted test. And the teacher was like, oh, I mean, just because she was gifted in California doesn't mean she's gifted in Florida. And my mom was like, if she's gifted in California, she is absolutely gifted in this Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And every Caribbean parent, if they put this or that in front of something, that is the Caribbean version of Lil. You know, like your little friend. That friend?
Mm.
Oh, this friend of yours? Yeah, that's the Caribbean version of, I'm diminishing this without saying that I don't think that highly of it, but just know. You and this Marquis. You know, like that was, I heard that about my first boyfriend every day.
I love that. Oh my goodness. Do you remember the first time that you used your voice and spoke out about something and you realized that people listened?
Okay, well, this is not that necessarily that they listened in a good way, but this is an example.
Yeah, okay.
In 10th grade, no, was it? It may have been senior year, actually. I was in an art class in school, and the teacher was doing a lesson on Aboriginal art. And she was like, you know, the Aboriginals are a Stone Age people. And I raised my hand, and I was like, I mean, that's not accurate. Like, the Aboriginal people are alive and well in Australia right now.
Stone Age.
So are you saying that they were alive during the Stone Age? Like, what are you trying to say? And she was like, essentially, which, mind you, I gave her an out. But instead, she doubled down on that, like, they're primitive. And I was like, I just think that is wholly inaccurate. And I don't think you should be speaking about the Aboriginal community in that way. And I have family in Australia, so I've always been I've just been informed of the Aboriginal community. We've always had Aboriginal art in our house. Mm. Some of my actual art style has like Aboriginal elements in it. And she called a meeting with the dean of students, the guidance counselor, and my mom. Now, mind you, I don't think she bargained for the fact that all of them was Black. Okay. So it's Mr. Little, Miss Percy, my mama, and this lady, Miss Schwenk. And so we all in there, you know, and here's the thing. My mom has always known that I am a fiercely honest person. My mother has never had mistrust for me. Like, when I was growing up, like, that was never an issue. Like, I know that a lot of people, you know, kids be lying and stuff. That ain't never been my jam. So I didn't have to deal with that. And my mom said that the lady called her and was like, you know, I want to talk to you and set a meeting because I have some complaints about your daughter. And my mom was like, oh, funny. I have heard my daughter have complaints about you.
I'm obsessed with her. I love your mom.
So, you know, we all sit up there in this meeting and she was like, so I remember the dean starting the conversation and he was like, you know, we're all here. What's the issue? Is Amanda talking in class? She said, no, you know, Amanda is, she does her work. He said, okay. Is she turning in her work late? She said, no, she actually has a piece being exhibited, you know, at the library. So he's like, what are we here for? She's like, well, Amanda corrects me in front of the students. And they were all like, is she right? And she was like, yes, but it is very, she basically was trying to say that I was undermining her authority by challenging her in front of the other classmates. Mm-hmm. And they were all like, I mean, you want students that are learning and paying attention. So this is the byproduct of that. You know, if you don't want students to pay attention, then, you know, you're going to get a different outcome. But if someone's paying attention and they have been actually been paying attention in their other classes too, then there's going to be some cross-pollination. So, but that's mm-hmm. a situation where I feel like I spoke up and I challenged and it ended up going in another direction, but I was heard because everybody else except for her, I mean, she heard me. She heard me enough to call all these Black people in a room together.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, my mom is like, so I left work for this.
Oh my goodness. So, well, that makes a lot of sense, right? Because you're saying honesty has always been your thing. And I think we live in a world where we kind of fake like we value honesty. Like it's a thing that, I almost, right? It's a thing we feel like we think we should say, like, just be honest with me. If you're honest with me, then I can deal with it, but I can't do anything with anything that's not the truth, right? It's like, we're cloaking ourselves in that, but what's really underneath is like, lie to me because I can't take the truth.
I can't take it.
I can't take it. And, you know, I think sometimes when you aren't, honesty like wins the long race, but the short sprints, it's the people who are not keeping it a buck that are, you know.
They're just lily padding, you know? Yes. They're just hopping from to and fro.
Yeah.
I mean, being this kind of person is not easily digestible for the world. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not. Like, the world is not really set up for honesty. I mean, we're watching an entire country lie every single day right now about what they are doing to an entire people, right? And like, and we're being told like, nah, it's not a lie. And then they will literally 2 days later be like, well, okay, so what I know we had said, but actually, and it's like, no, but you said it with your chest though. Like, you didn't just say it like there's a possibility. Like, you declare these things, you get people behind you declaring these things, and then you'd retract it to now have room to declare the next thing. We've seen that on this level, then you see it just on like celebrity levels, you know, with marketing, etc. And it's just a very duplicitous method of interacting with people. And I see it so much, and it just makes me be more like grinding my heels into like, no, I need to be 100% authentic. But again, if that's the society that is like around you, then that means that you're like rebelling just by existing.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
And then I think there's also something to be said for it. I've had to do a lot of learning on how to deliver honesty in the most receptive ways. Right? Like, that's not always necessarily the easiest thing to do. I've had to learn how to, you know, just receive honesty as well. Like, be able to.
Ooh, you can give it, but, you know, really being able to receive. That's real. That's real.
So I think that's the other part of it, right? It's like, how useful is the honesty if it can't be received? And that, you know, so that's a dance too. That's a dance. And it's, you're not really necessarily even like taught how to do that. It really is kind of just bumps and bruises in trying to find my way through that. But it's, it, It's the only way I know how to live. I genuinely, and that's why when people suggest for even a moment that I'm lying about something, it is.
Yeah.
It really gets my guilt.
Whoa. So that's what I wanted to ask you next. We talked earlier about the cost, right? And so I want to know, what would you say the cost has been? What has it been? What has it felt like? And I want to also add that for me, something that's really tough, it's a personal journey that I'm on, is being misunderstood. I like really, when I feel like I'm articulating myself really well and I'm coming from an honest, genuine place and I'm still just completely misunderstood, nothing stresses me out more. But I've learned I'm not in charge of others' comprehension. I can't. Mm. All I can do is the best that I can do. And if I'm still misunderstood, also a lot of times people misunderstand you because they want to.
They've committed to that.
They've committed to it. They know what you're saying. They know it's real, but they're just deciding that they don't want to understand. So anyway, I just go back to wondering how you feel about that, but also what has the cost been for you?
I mean, being misunderstood is really, like, I'm the same. Like, that really just wears me out. Mm-hmm. And I would say I'm better at it now. But it used to really trigger like low self-esteem.
Yes.
And just kind of like self-doubt. And I would beat myself up, you know, just about that. I mean, to this day, like I can let that in, but it doesn't last as long, you know? Like I've gotten better at just like,
I think age and just time helps that for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I think age and like time. And then, you know, you also just kind of like, you get people around you that are just better at affirming things. I mean, I have a friend that like, we have an ongoing, am I tripping situation? Like, I'll be like, okay, am I tripping? You know? And like, it's an ongoing, like, am I tripping episode 922? this and this happened, like, help me, you know, help me understand like where I may have gone wrong in this. But I think so the succinct answer to your question is, what have I lost in that? That's what you were asking?
Yeah. Well, what would you say is the cost of your honesty? Yes.
The cost of my honesty has been, in the moment, it felt like losing friends, but in reality, it was clearing house, right? Sometimes it's been peace, you know, because you kick up dust, folks, you know, folks is gonna flail about, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's inner peace that I've, you know, pay the cost with, because you sometimes feel like you need to just say the thing. And now you're like, why did I say the thing? And so that's its own
thing.
I think ultimately people think that the cost I've paid has been like success on a certain level. Like, I think people always ask, like, you know, has your honesty kept you from getting certain roles or, you know, kind of attaining a certain level of fame? But when I was honest with myself, I realized you don't want that. Anyway, oof. I don't want that. I don't want to be a superstar. I am a star. Like, my personality is very like, hello, I'm here, you know, but I don't aspire for everyone to know, did you know Amanda's here? Like, that's a different thing.
It is. And when you're around it, you are like, oh, that life is wild.
Like, that's a different kind of thing.
That's why we used to have E! True Hollywood Story.
It's a thing. And I when I was finally like truly, truly honest with myself, it was like, that is not what you are in pursuit of. You are actually in pursuit of spaces where you can be as authentic and true to yourself as possible, and where you can have real conversations because I really enjoy talking and like just the I really enjoy like philosophizing, like thinking things through mm-hmm. and talking them out and, you know, knowing that where I land on it today may not be where I land on it a week from now, you know, after I've thought about it a bit more, you know, et cetera. And in order to have those spaces, like you just have to disconnect yourself from other things.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you actually quickly, when do you decide that you want to share things publicly? Or how do you decide that you are the person that's like, I would normally just talk to my homegirl or homeboy about the why am I tripping, but actually I'm sharing this to my Instagram page.
I feel like sometimes it really is just as basic as I'm bothered by something and I'm just not being fully thoughtful about the ramifications of mm-hmm. sharing, right? Other times, I think other times it's just like, I feel like if I don't say something, then this will harm someone else. So
that's real.
I'm like, I need to say something. Cause if I don't, then, you know, somebody else is going to feel this. And I don't want that to happen. Like, I don't want that on me. Like, I don't want to be complicit in this happening. So sometimes it's that. And then sometimes it's just like, maybe listen, I'm a comedian. So sometimes it's like, there's a joke coming here, you know, like I feel like this, there's a joke that could come here. And so I need to share this because I know this is going to be funny. So sometimes it's that. There's different reasons, but I mean, ultimately it always comes from an authentic place. Like it's never like I am trying to throw somebody under the bus. Like it's not like sinister in that way, you know? I mean, I'm also a human. So sometimes it's like, did y'all know this person was mean to me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I don't let me see you out here faking like you nice.
You're calling it out.
I'm like, no, because you had said this. Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's bringing you joy lately? In the midst of so much just like, not
ice
joy.
Cream.
Taco Bell.
Taco Bell. Like, I'm not like a foodie, but there's just like certain things that like really, like Pocky really brings me joy.
Oh, you're a Pocky girl. Oh, is that the strawberry kind?
Yes, it is. The crunchy strawberry. Mm. The ocean always brings me joy. I've been really fortunate to have moved closer to the ocean. I'm not like on the ocean, but I'm close enough to where I don't have to like make a day plan to go to the ocean.
It's not a hike. Yeah.
Yeah. Like mm-hmm. I can fit it in. And, I think, it's like me just making that a part of my wellness, like to just go and sit even for an hour. Just go and sit by the sea. Sometimes I don't even look up. Sometimes I'm looking at my phone. Sometimes I'm looking at a magazine, you know, but I bring the dog and we just sit there. And just being in that space, I know that I'm very blessed to be able to do that. So I need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
What else? But you know what's bringing me joy? Also just continuously like making my home my own. I was in here for 3 years with somebody and I really made an effort to be very conscious of the fact that I was not here by myself and that they have different interests and that they have different preferences and they have different likes. And so I was just constantly, I don't want to say compromise in a negative way, but like that was something I was willing to do in a partnership, right? Like I can compromise that. Like, and so getting to really just like box out and let my creative senses just fully expand into the space has been like really a joyful time.
Oh, good. I love that for you. Amanda, what has been your takeaway from our conversation today?
I would say the takeaway is that I did not know that you felt so, that you thought so highly of me. Mm. And as a peer and a colleague, I really appreciate that. I don't feel connected to like the entertainment space of like Black Hollywood, like as I once really desired to be. I eventually just felt very ostracized from that space. Like, I don't feel like I was welcomed into it. Mm-hmm. Ooh, am I getting emotional? I'm a Cancer. That doesn't really mean much. I just never felt embraced by what I realized that it was less about me and more about what I had thought Black Hollywood was. And then you realize, because I am in a, especially right now, I'm in a very intentional effort of realism.
I love it.
And I just kind of like had to just let the disenchantment, you know, come through me and make my own space. And so when I hear that from someone who I know from that space, like it felt good.
I love that. And I mean,
you also do soothing. You like, that's like a thing that your child is going to appreciate. This.
Oh, yes. Okay, that's good.
It's like your version of a purr.
Ooh, or like a om.
Yeah.
Well, both meditative.
Both are healing frequencies. Oms and the cat's purr are healing frequencies. That's why they like bring cats into like nursing homes and like hospitals. Not just because like it's like, oh, a pet, an animal, but like their purr is a literal like healing frequency.
I received that. No one's ever told me that before. So I really received that. Amanda, my takeaway is, it's kind of like what I said at the top. Like, I feel really grateful to have someone as incredible and generous as you in my orbit. You share so much of yourself with us, and there's so much to be gained. And I truly feel like it is such a, you know, I'm kind of reframing, for instance, my relationship with social media. And knowing that I can go to social media and always see you there telling me the truth or informing me about something that might be hidden from me in another way. Yeah. You know, it matters. And it especially matters today with everything we're going through as Black women and going to go through, and with the country we live in. With it, it is, Amanda, you are doing God's work. And I just want you to know that I know that. And
thank you.
I'll be spreading the word. I just appreciate you. You know, I've been a guest on your podcast. You're now a guest on mine.
Yeah.
And I just, I love you. I honor you. And I'm really proud of you, Amanda. Don't stop for anybody. Keep going.
The feeling is all mutual. It is all mutual.
Thank you. I appreciate you, sis. Yay. We did it. We did it. Thank you for listening. This podcast is produced by LWC Studios for OWN. The show's executive producer is Juleka Lantigua. Our managing producer is Fatima Elswifi. Shanice Tindall is our lead producer. Jordan Thompson is our marketing coordinator. This episode was mixed by Trin Lightburn. Michelle Baker is our video editor. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, and we hope you did, please make sure to subscribe, leave a rating, and review wherever you listen to your podcast to ensure you hear the next one.